Welcome back to Perfect Takes. I'm your host, Stephen Patton, joined as always by my co-host and dear friend, Jake LaQuire. Today, we are breaking down the NFC East, which features the reigning Super Bowl champions, who we'll get to at the very end. We start worst to first, and unfortunately, that means we're going to talk about the G-Men or the Giants. And I think what's interesting is they went a couple different directions during the draft. I thought they did the right thing taking best player available with Abdul Carter. He's a guy that I think will transform that defensive line from being great to potentially elite. And if you want to talk about an avenue for the Giants winning games, it is going to be that defensive line. But Jacob, before I get too far into the first segment, how's your day? We have Panthers football tonight. A lot to be excited about. I think I got ahead of myself there.
Is it real? Well, it is Panthers football, but it's not really Panthers football. Although I will say there is a Bryce playing. It's not Bryce Young. It's Bryce Perkins. The UFL, I believe it's called now, MVP, is getting a chance to play with Andy Dalton's, I think, elbow injured. So maybe he has an audition and can be the third QB. I'm not super impressed with what Jack Plummer's been able to do, I guess, for a full season now and another offseason. So maybe we can be Perkins can be the next PJ Walker. If you remember, he was the XFL MVP that we signed and eventually started some games for us. Maybe Perkins can find himself onto the roster and the Panthers can be kind of the UFL XFL pipeline for rising players.
Yeah, it's one way to utilize kind of that minor league of sorts that the NFL has kind of in the off season. And what's interesting that you brought up this, his playing style, at least when you look at highlights, he's outside of the pocket. He's making more creative throws. And I think that lends itself to how Bryce Young operates the offense. So for some reason, Bryce Young misses time. Andy Dalton's not healthy still. He's a guy that I think can give you a little bit of what Bryce Young brings to the table. He's the generic store brand version, so to speak. But yeah, go right ahead.
Well, and I think it's a good segue because the play style you're talking about, the creativity outside of the pocket and looking downfield, reminds me a lot of a prime, let me stress, prime Russell Wilson there, who he's not in his prime anymore, but he is the at least week one starter of the New York Giants. They brought in not one, not two, but count them three quarterbacks this offseason. Obviously Wilson, they bring in Jameis Winston as well from the Browns, and they traded back into the first round to draft Jackson Dart, the Ole Miss quarterback this past season. What do you kind of make of the QB room there? I know the Browns said that they're keeping four QBs, but how do we see the Giants QB room playing out with them bringing in three new guys and Tommy DeVito being like a fan favorite that they might want to keep her out?
Well, Russell Wilson is going to be the starter week one. I think his health is going to obviously be a big concern. He missed a large portion of the season to start last year and then finished down the stretch with the Steelers, no issues. But it's some of those hiccups that I think would lend itself to Jameis Winston playing. And I think if these two quarterbacks can keep the Giants somehow above 500, and when you look at their schedule, it is hard to find those wins. But if they are able to manage that, I think they stave off a Jackson Dart start. I think him sitting a year is very beneficial, especially when Brian Daboll gets to kind of work on some stuff with him as he sees things at an NFL pace. And so I think that's going to be instrumental for Jackson Dart long term. But if this is a team that comes out of the gate and they're 2-6 and you're halfway through the year, you're at your bye week and you really have nothing to play for, at that point there probably isn't any other option because you're going to be in a position to draft another quarterback. So you need to evaluate Jackson Dart while you still can. So that's the domino effect or cascade that could happen. But it really is the Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston show, barring a Russ injury.
They actually have the week 14 bye week with I think the Panthers have that as well, the Niners and maybe the Patriots. Four teams have it. Let me read off their first, let's say, 10 weeks, because I think Chicago's They're not going to be favored, but Chicago is probably one of the favorable teams. They start the season in Washington, then they go to, I'm talking about the Giants.
Wait, hold on. Hey, list this off, and I'll just go win-loss. Okay. We'll count this off.
Just some off-the-dome win-losses here. At Washington, week one.
Loss.
At Dallas, week two.
Loss.
Versus Kansas City on Sunday Night Football for some reason in week three.
Loss.
Versus the LA Chargers.
You know what? Chargers are going to charge them. We'll give them the win. So they're
one. And it'll be a 10 a.m. body game for the Chargers too. The New Orleans Saints, in New Orleans.
We'll give this. New Orleans has got to win one or two throughout the year, right? So like, we'll coin flip on the last two. So we're at 1-4.
All right. So then they host Philly on Thursday Night Football.
Loss 1-5.
They go to Denver the next week.
1-6.
And then they go to Philly for week eight. We can just cut it off there.
Yeah, 1-6. So if, through the first 8 weeks, they might win two games, the Chargers and the Saints, and maybe a division game.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think this is going to be a favorable situation for Russell Wilson to come in and lead this team to prominence this season. I honestly think that they're going to go from Russ to Dart. I think it would be like a leapfrog of Winston, because if you're that bad to start the year, Daboll and Joe Shane are on the hot seat. The last card they have to play is the rookie. And it's like, oh, we need to see what this guy has. Let's play him for the rest of the year. It's kind of why it confused me that they signed two veterans. But I think you're right. If they are going to win games and win those few games in that stretch that we talked about, it's going to be on the backs of the defense, right? They have Dexter Lawrence, who best nose tackle in the league. I think we agree. Brian Burns is a good player. And then adding Abdul Carter to that front, I think is going to make it really deadly. They were already pretty good against the run. The front was, the back end wasn't. And they could pressure the quarterback, but they were still relatively low in terms of efficiency metrics. So I think getting Carter, who can play the run, who we know is a good pass rusher, is going to help a lot in that department. And then the back end, they add Paulson Adebo from the Saints, the corner, and they pay big money for Javon Holland from Miami. So it's not just a retooled front, so to speak. They added some help in the back end, too, to help out guys like Deontay Banks and Tyler Newbin. So overall, I think this defense should be a much improved unit. I just don't know if it's going to be enough considering who they have to play and how lackluster I think the offense is going to be.
So We've already talked about the Ravens, and I don't know if I've alluded to this on air, but me and Jacob have this kind of like side bet. We do these like cookout trade bets. And I was a little high on Mike Green during the draft process and was like, oh, he's going to get 15 and a half sacks, blah, blah, blah. And Jacob checks me.
Defensive rookie of the year. I have it on a sticky note on my desk right here.
And so he has every right to check me if and when that doesn't come true. But in regards to a player that could absolutely hit the ground running and do something like that, it would be an Abdul Carter, because just the like 5 to 10 snaps, I think it was less than 10. I think it is like close to that 5 number. The reps he put against the Bills starters were insane. Like moving Osiris Torrance, putting the move that he did on Deion Dawkins to get to the quarterback. And then at one point during a run where you're pulling the guard, he was a literal wall and did not move, holding the tackle, and the guard runs into the tackle and falls over. I mean, like, that isn't like, he gets compared to Micah Parsons, one, because he wore the same number at Penn State. He initially played the same position. They both kind of had that edge player background. But like, if he's able to be this impactful in the run game, it changes the dynamics, because I think that was one of the concerns with this Giants defensive line. Can they stop the run? And he is answering that for me. So like, Kayvon Thibodeau, he was a top 5 pick. He was expected to be something special. He's a good starter. But having him as a rotational guy to come in for relief or some like NASCAR packages is going to be insane, because those three guys that we've talked about are all Pro Bowl calibers. And Abdul Carter, I think, can really come onto the scene and be special. So if they're going to win games, it's going to be because of those guys in the trenches and them limiting mistakes on offense. I feel like that's the big thing. If they can stay somewhat healthy on the offensive line, they can methodically move down the field, chew clock, not turn the ball over. This is a team that might be able to surprise and get the 3-5 by that halfway marker, which at that point you still feel competitive because that was a gauntlet of a stretch. But if you're anything worse than that, like you said, you're kind of packing in the season. Your head coach and general manager are on the hot seat. And like you said, the last card to play is to see, do we have anything with Jackson Dart? And if for some reason he's the truth and he just turns it on and they somehow end the year at 500, then maybe there's a case to keep head coach and general manager. But I think everybody knows this is the last hurrah.
It's tough for me to see a scenario outside of a positive record in which both of those guys, Dable and Joe Shane, end up staying. The next team that we'll talk about, they lose their head coach. It was more of a soft firing. They didn't extend him and subsequently didn't let him interview with other teams, which is kind of a dick move, I'll admit. But they hire internally Brian Schottenheimer, who was the offensive coordinator last year, is now the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. They didn't change their GM either. So, like, it's all internal with them. Maybe a bit underwhelming if you're a Cowboys fan. But last year, this was a 7-10 team, which I called like week 8 or something in one of my perfect takes that they would be 7-10. So I'm going to toot my own horn there. And really, I think they overperformed to get to that 7-10 record, because if you look at how their offense and defense ranked across the league, they're 28th in offensive EPA per play, like really low on offense. Then on defense, 30th in EPA per play allowed, like 24th in success rate. Do you want to guess where they ranked in points per game allowed last year?
The Cowboys?
Yes.
It had to have been in the 20s because they had the mess of injuries that they're still dealing with. I want to say 22nd.
They were 31st, only better than the Carolina Panthers. Like, the Panthers were like a 5-point difference between them, so like a huge deal, but still allowed a ton of points per game. And you wouldn't think that given the 7-10 record, right? That's why I'm saying I think they overperformed and they dealt with a ton of injuries with Dak Prescott, hopefully back and healthy, with Micah Parsons healthy. He's not back yet because they haven't extended him. But with a lot of the guys coming back, with a lot of new coordinators, some scheme change on defense, how do you think the Cowboys season is going to play out this upcoming season? Do you think they're going to be better, maybe similar, because they have similar leadership in place? How do you think it's going to play out?
I think they're trending upwards, especially on offense. Zach Martin retires and you go, you lose a Hall of Fame guard. And that's absolutely true. But like last year he played banged up and I don't think he was 100%. So like getting a rookie in the building who is a true starter and potential like elite player at the position. I like that pairing with Tyler Smith on the interior. Cooper Beebe looked good as a rookie last year. So at that point, your questions do really involve the tackles. The George Pickens makes so much sense. The Cowboys ran the most trips formation. And when you have an X receiver like Pickens, and then you're able to have CeeDee Lamb kind of in a bunch formation with a free release, it creates so many different leverage conflict scenarios with the defense. Like, do you shift coverage to George Pickens or do you just leave him on an island? And if you don't leave him on an island and you shift coverage to Pickens, it's like, well, CeeDee Lamb probably is going to get open. So that's where I think the offense for the Cowboys, even though I don't think the run game's necessarily going to get better, I don't think the offensive line is going to just dramatically improve. I think because of just the different things they did to either just stay at the same level or improve at different positions, they're going to get better. On the defensive side of the ball, Diggs is...
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Still not 100%, so he's not going to start probably week one. And then their third-round corner, Ravel,
ECU.
Okay. So it's Josh Norman's Coastal. That's right. I was like, for some reason, I thought it was like Coastal, but you are right. Bevel. No, is it Bevel?
It's Revel. Shavon Revel.
It is Revel. Okay. I don't know why I'm getting that whole...
Daryl Bevel, maybe.
Maybe there we go. So Revel, great rangy cornerback, like a corner that I would truly want to draft and build around if I was a general manager. So I love the scheme fit, but he's not healthy. So their guys potentially to start the year are Deron Bland, who he's good. He's an opportunistic player, similar to Diggs, but he's not necessarily a shutdown corner. And he's been dealing with injuries, so he's not necessarily maybe the player he once was. And then they just traded for Kaiir Elam. Like, you're relying on those two guys being the starters. That's what scares me when I look at this defense. I love what they did on the defensive line. You draft Donovan Ezeruko. You get Dante Fowler. You have these situational pass rushers that go alongside Micah Parsons. You hope Matt Eberflus is going to get this team coached up well enough to stop the run, something that hasn't been able to be done over the past couple of years. And if that happens and you get healthy in the secondary, I think down the stretch, this is a defense that could look good. Right now, there are a lot of concerns.
What I worry about on the defensive side of the ball is, how does Matt Eberflus like to build his defenses with the two, like a strong linebacker tandem, off-ball linebacker, inside linebacker, whatever you want to say, tandem in the middle. And as it stands, the Cowboys are projected to start Kenneth Murray, who's bounced around since being, I think he was a first-round pick for the Chargers about 5 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, and from the Titans, I believe. And then Marist Liafau, who's a younger player as well. Demarvion Overshown, who was really coming on at the end of last year, tore his ACL in the Week 16 game against the Giants, I think. It was a later game in the season, but he would have been a starter, and I would have felt a lot more comfortable with the linebacker room there if they were able to get him to play. That doesn't look like it's going to be the case. Ultimately, I think Micah Parsons is going to play for this team because that's how it always happens, despite the fact that every day it seems like a new insider is reporting that this is actually going to lead to a trade. I'm not so sure. Jerry Jones always caves in the end, much to the detriment of the fandom sanity and the team's cap sheet. I think he will cave in. Maybe he'll give him the deal after week one or something like that. But on offense, like, my concerns on defense, I think, are pretty sound. On offense, if you look at what they were last year, even before Dak got hurt, they weren't really good. But afterwards, they were like bottom 10 in third and fourth down conversion rate, and they were 31st in red zone offense. So it was not good by any stretch of the mean. And they didn't bring an outside perspective in to take over the offense, I'll say. Clayton Adams, I believe, is new, the new offensive coordinator. But Schottenheimer was in the building last year for that. And while he didn't call plays, I feel like he's going to be, or what he's going to try to create with his system is going to be more similar to what it was last year. Granted, I think George Pickens can offer a new wrinkle, but I wonder just how much more innovative Schottenheimer can be, given he's not really ever had this chance before, right? I don't recall if he actually called plays in Seattle back in, I want to say 2019. It was some time ago.
He did.
The last time he had a play calling position. So I wonder just how creative he can be this season when there's a lot on the line.
So Clayton Adams, the offensive coordinator that you brought up, he comes from Arizona and he was our offensive line coach. So I think what's interesting is Brian Schottenheimer is trying to marry the run and the pass. I think he's going to try to get Dak potentially under center a little bit more and work off some of those concepts. And again, putting the defense in conflict. That was, I think, the purpose of the George Pickens trade is, like, you're trying to gain an advantage on these one-on-one matchups or create these one-on-one matchups that you know your player is going to win. So in that respect, in that regard, I think Brian Schottenheimer, it has a direction of where he wants to go. For me, you talked about the front office and just like how I think like rigid or not rigid, but like how they've just stayed the same. Like Stephen Jones is going to be the de facto general manager, just like Duke Tobin is for the Cincinnati Bengals. Some of these other franchises where like the ownership and the general manager has been tied to the hip for like decades. Howie Roseman's the same.
Mickey Loomis, as we just saw last night, trading a fourth round pick for a 28-year-old second-year player. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, and so, like, when you have that, it's like, for me, like, all of the issues I have with the Cowboys front office is how they go about, like, these contract extensions with the stars they draft. Because, like, their evaluation department, led by Will McClay, is phenomenal. Their analytics department they've built over the past half decade has some phenomenal individuals. So they have some really good people in the building, and they're doing some really good things. They're just shooting themselves in the foot. And it's hard to see how they get over the hump or the holes that they keep digging themselves if they're going to be able to get out of it. I am a believer that this is a team that is going to be able to lean on its offense. It has enough playmakers on defense to generate enough negative plays to keep them in games and win as the season progresses. And for me, this is a team that I think can sneak into the playoffs. And if they get healthy at the right time, maybe there are a team that can win a playoff game or two, but I don't think Super Bowl aspirations are within the picture at all. This is a team that has a lot of holes, and I don't see them getting fixed anytime soon.
I have to agree with you there. I think the Cowboys can take a step this season, especially if Dak's fully healthy. When Dak's fully healthy, they're a playoff team, just plain and simple. So I think that's the goal. The next team kind of exceeded their year one goals, and I kind of worry about what their year two was going to look like with Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury and Dan Quinn, because it was Dan Quinn's first year. The Washington Commanders, they were pretty easily the surprise of last season, ended 12-5 in the NFC Championship, where they got smoked by the Eagles. It was a 55-point pounding that the Eagles put on them, a lot of turnovers and all that, but I think the regular season returns and the first playoff games were pretty, pretty good for the Washington Commanders. Last year, top five offense across the board, right? Jaden Daniels was the star of the show. I have concerns this year, despite the help that they brought in on both offense and defense. And my concerns are mainly the fact that they are super old. The people that they brought in are not clean bills of health, so to speak. And my main concern is they lack, they lack like high-end explosive potential at the skill positions, which I think when you have a very explosive player can make you less prone to regression. I think that this team, the Washington Commanders, are a team that might take a bit of a tumble in year two. How do you think that they can avoid, or if you agree with me, you can say that, but how do you think they avoid the sophomore slump, the dreaded sophomore slump?
So I want to kind of throw this out there. Lamar Jackson, I think you could even maybe throw this out there. Like, what was the most explosive playmaker he had, like, in regards to, like, this comparison? Because I think that goes almost hand in hand, and it's because of how those offenses are designed around those specific quarterbacks.
Are you talking early in his career, like during his
early on, like obviously MVP? It's like, okay, so he had Mark Andrews, he had Hollywood Brown, but like
I think Mark Andrews guys are like tiers better than anyone. Like Mark Andrews back then is tiers better than anyone on the Commanders' offense right now, other than
I'm saying like Terry McLaurin last year, like the output that he had, in my opinion, is better than like arguably any receiver that Lamar Jackson has had to work with. And my concern with Terry McLaurin, as we get into like talking about the playmakers that are around them, this seems very much like a deja vu situation, considering Adam Peters, like his background comes from San Francisco. And what happened last offseason? They did this whole runaround with their star wide receiver and Brandon Ayuk. He's not practicing. And then what? He tears his ACL. And like, Terry McLaurin's no spring chicken. That's part of the reason why the Commanders are doing this running around with him and this contract situation. And he's doing this hold in and this, that, the third. But like, if he gets on the field and he can stay healthy, Deebo Samuel to me is an upgrade to what they were trying to have Dyami Brown do in this offense. He does not look overweight. He looks in shape according to some of these preseason snaps that we've seen recently. And so he's definitely has this mindset of staying in a good weight. As long as his snap count is watched by Cliff Kingsbury, I'm excited to see his involvement. You have a rookie in Jalen Lane, a second-year player in Ben Sinnott, some of these younger guys that you can still lean on, but it does come back to your point about health. how I think the Commanders ultimately stave off regression is their ability to just stay on the field. And so you're right. They don't have necessarily a lot of these big time explosive playmakers, especially if Terry or Deebo Samuel miss time. But what they do have is a quarterback that can play on time, in schedule, in rhythm. And so if it's not there, that first read, he's able to take off and pick up 5 yards with his legs. And so they're constantly just staying on the field, picking up down after down. And their fourth down conversion rate is probably going to regress. But again, I think this is a team that just understands itself and what they're capable of doing. And until we see a defense that's able to put a game plan out to stop this, because when defenses start crowding the line of scrimmage, that's when Jaden Daniels beats you with his arm. He can beat you with some of those one-on-one coverages. And so that's my concern is it's hard for me to see a defense adjusting and stopping Jaden Daniels because we haven't seen anybody do it yet.
Well, on those plays, it takes two people to complete them, right? The receiver on the other end, I think, is who I worry about a bit more, especially if we're going to get a lesser practiced McLaurin and some of the ancillary weapons there. But I can see the upside with the offense, especially with some offensive line investment. I think Laremy Tunsil, even being older, even missing some time, is going to be better than all the people they had at left tackle last year. And if he's not, maybe they can turn to the rookie that they drafted in the first round. I think my largest concerns for this team are on the defensive side of the ball. If you thought that I was, nervous about the older additions that they had on offense, just look at the defense. They're bringing in guys like Von Miller, who's going to be a projected starter this season. Marshawn Lattimore, who they traded for last year, even once he got on the field, wasn't good. And he's getting up there in age. Their whole kind of additions this offseason on the defensive side of the ball just are perplexing to me. Javon Kinlaw, they paid quite a good contract to, or a fair contract, I should say.
And cheaper than Jonathan Allen, which I think is their logic.
Cheaper, but also worse. And they drafted Jerzan Newton 2 years ago to take that spot. And from all accounts, from what I've heard, is that Kinlaw looks to be the starter alongside Daron Payne. They lose Dante Fowler. Von Miller, I don't think, can replace that. Von Miller hasn't been good, frankly, since he signed with the Buffalo Bills. So I want to see how that one works out. They extended Bobby Wagner, who I think he's well into his 30s at this point, I'm pretty sure. Frankie Louvu, I think, turns 30 this year. So it's really going to come down to the young playmakers being guys like Trey Amos, the rookie corner, and Mike Sainristil, who's going to be their starting nickel corner. I don't know. I just have a lot of questions about this side of the ball. I think it's not the veteran stopgaps that they signed last year that I think all worked out really well and coalesced. I don't see how Von Miller is going to fit with Javon Kinlaw, like that being one side of your defensive line. I'm not sure how Will Harris, the free agent from the New Orleans Saints, is going to fit with Marshawn Lattimore on the back end. I think there's just a lot of room for error on the defense, and the defense last year was about league average. I could see this unit getting closer to the bottom of the league in this season.
They were below average last year. And
17th EPA per play and 13th success rate. It's about league average.
Yes and no. Like for a long time throughout the season, they were hovering in the lower 20s. They got better as the season went on and were able to do things defensively because, again, that's what happens when a new coaching staff is able to get some of these concepts kind of underneath people's belts and they're playing within the scheme. And that being said, I do like their interior defensive line rotation. As much as you're saying Johnny Newton is not a projected starter, he showed a lot of snaps last year where he was making impact plays. And so if Kinlaw is beating him out, in my opinion, that just means that they have a good interior rotation. The issue on that defensive line does stick out with the edge position, but you have Dietrich Wise, Von Miller, Dorrance Armstrong. These aren't necessarily like all-stars, pro bowlers, but these are guys that you feel comfortable in a rotation, unlike like a team like the Atlanta Falcons, where it's like they may not be able to generate pressure, but I feel confident that they're going to be impactful in the run game. And I think that's the setup of the Commanders, is they want to rely on getting teams in these third and long situations, and then employing exotic pressure looks where you have Frankie Louvu coming after the quarterback and you're able to drop seven in coverage. And that's where the addition of Trey Amos and obviously Mike Sanders still taking a step and being able to play in the slot this year are huge pluses from what you were working with last year. So it's more just seeing the wins and the margins. And I think while they didn't necessarily like make these massive improvements that I think they did last year, they have a solid enough floor with Jaden Daniels at quarterback that they're going to win probably close to 10 plus wins again, just because they have enough talent on both sides of the ball.
I don't know if enough talent on the defensive side of the ball is how I would characterize it. I think we're approaching Jaden Daniels having to do Joe Burrow level of out our offensive production.
That's crazy.
In order it was happening last year at the beginning of the year. It's just like you said, the defense kind of started to lock in, and I personally think the replacements for the guys they left are worse. So we'll have to see. But then again, you also have internal growth from the young players. I don't think this team has enough talent to be regression proof, especially when they overperformed in year one, I think. But I think a team that does have a lot of talent and is probably as close to regression proof as you can coming off
crazy.
Of a Super Bowl.
That's crazy.
Is the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, they're across the board the most talented team, right? Except for one position, I think we can identify there. So when you have stars at every level, I find it hard for you to find losses. And that's kind of how it is with the Philadelphia Eagles. Top 10 offense last year, top 2 defense across the board. They do lose Kellen Moore, who was their offensive coordinator and play caller. Kevin Petullo, I believe, is an internal hire, if I'm not mistaken. So that's within the system. Yep. What's going to be the Achilles heel for the Eagles this year? Or are they the expected favorite to make it back to the Super Bowl for the NFC?
So this team limped out to a 3-3 record last year. And it wasn't really until Cooper DeJean, some of the guys in the secondary, started gelling that they really turned it up a notch. And this is a defense that's losing Josh Sweat, Milton Williams, Isaiah Rogers on the back end, Darius Slay. And then when you consider some of their other players or the guys that are going to have to step up in starting roles, a lot of these guys haven't had to play full-time snaps. And this is like Ojamo, Jalix Hunt. And then you look at the linebackers, it's like, okay, Zach Bond is good. I think he was dealing with some lingering injuries at the end of last year. But your first-round pick, Jahad Campbell, is probably not going to be 100% come week one. And then the guy that you drafted a couple years ago, a guy out of Georgia, I'm blanking out on his name, not Quay Walker. It's
N'Kobe Dean.
N'Kobe Dean. So N'Kobe Dean, he's not going to be 100% by week one. And that makes sense. His injury came at the end of last year. So you're not fully 100% on your linebacker room. You just lost all those guys. And I didn't even mention CJ Gardner-Johnson on that back end. So like you're relying on Andrew Makuba and a couple other guys that really just do not make up the strong, deep secondary that you just had a year ago on the Super Bowl run, to the point that you just traded for Jacory Brissett or Brissett. No, is it Brissett or Brissett? Whoever it is, a corner from Las Vegas.
Jacory and Bennett.
Him. Bennett, not Brissett.
Yeah. You're thinking of Bill Krosky Merritt. I think he's on your mind with Washington.
So regardless, is that the Eagles, like, you look at all these holes on the defense, they were not this great defense to start the year. And when you have these gaps, especially in the middle of your defense, if teams are able to take advantage of that early and often, this is not going to look good to start the year, and it's going to take them some time to adjust. So you talk about regression proof. I don't think it's regression proof, because we've seen this whole hire in-house the offensive coordinator side. It doesn't work out because they just try to spam what they do well, and they'll be an above average. They'll be close to a top 10 offense, but this isn't going to be the explosive playmaking like group that we saw last year. And then the year that two, three years ago, what, in 2022?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, because 2023 was, my bad. So 2022, like, with Shane Steichen. So, like, those 2 years, and that's why I think this is going to be a down year. Shane Steichen's going to get fired. He's going to get brought back, and then they'll have another up year. But, like, that's where it's just, like, you talk about a team that's due for a regression. They are very much set up for one.
I do not see the holes on the defense that you are so vehemently concerned about. Guys like Darius Slay that you're talking about, he was played out of the starter role by the end of the year. You mentioned how it took some time for guys like Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean to acclimate to the year. They were rookies. It's going to take time. And by the end of the year, both of those guys were starters. You said Makuba's going to have to start. No, he's not. Ree Blankenship and Sidney Brown, guys that have been in the system, are going to start. And
they were backups last year for a reason. Ree Blankenship was a starter last year, but he was the worst player on that back end.
Sidney Brown played. Darius Slay was really bad last year, so I don't know.
But Isaiah Rogers, he was a guy that came in and played snaps.
He was an innings eater. He was not a star by any means. You even said you had questions about him being on the, what was it, the Vikings that we talked about on Tuesday. So I wouldn't go gassing him up. And then the Josh Sweat, I think that's Josh Sweat is probably their biggest
I think he's
loss.
Better than Kilo Ringo. I think Rogers is better than Ringo.
Kilo Ringo's that's the big point. Yeah. A great player. I'll say that. But you mentioned, what was I going to say? Josh Sweat. Nolan Smith already is one half sack away from having the most sacks in Eagles postseason history. Jalix Hunt had a very good postseason. I agree with you with Moro Ojomo replacing Milton Williams. But Milton Williams had the luxury of playing on an Eagles defensive line where he played maybe 50% of the snaps because they have Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis there as well. So it's not as if he's going to have to be a heavy starter. I have very few issues with the defensive side of the ball. The offense, I agree with you, though. I think we are going to see a bit of brain drain. Jalen Hurts and that offense need the right kind of coordinator, like you mentioned with Steichen, like you mentioned with Kellen Moore last season. And I don't know if it's going to be more of the same. I think they do need to innovate because innovation is the key to success for offenses in the NFL. But I do have concerns there, particularly with I don't think Saquon Barkley is going to be bad by any means, but he's not going to give them 2,000 yards of just churning the ball, moving the sticks down in and down. It'll be closer to like 1,200 if I guess. And my God, right, 1,200, how bad that is for an Eagles running back. But they have a lot of talent on that side of the ball, particularly on the line, that I think they can lean on that and still be a pretty strong offense for most of the season, especially since the tush push also hasn't been banned. You know they're going to convert third, fourth downs and red zone looks. So I don't think the sky is falling particularly for this team. But I do think that there are holes where they're not going to win, 14 games last year. I think we could see them slide back to 12 or 11, but they would still be my favorite to win the division.
I hesitate on the division simply because I think this offense is an AJ Brown or Saquon Barkley injury away from putting Jalen Hurts in a situation where he's going to look uncomfortable. This was a quarterback that did not play facing a deficit, and I believe every single second half, like after their bye week, up until the Super Bowl. Like that just, it goes to show just how dominant this Eagles team was able to turn it on. And they lost a lot of pieces. Like we listed off the guys they lost on the defensive side. And you can talk about, yes, they have guys on the back end where there's some familiarity with the system. You have some younger guys that could come in and take quality reps, just like we saw younger guys step up last year. But you go to the offensive line, you're going to have to replace the run mauler and Mekhi Becton. So that's going to probably impact some of Saquon's rushing ability. If he gets hurt for whatever reason, are you going to have the same kind of impact from A.J. Dillon or Will Shipley? And it's like if you don't have that same impact, A.J. Brown's out for a little bit. This offense goes from, okay, borderline maybe top 10 to where I think they're a below average unit. And that completely changes the numbers game. And then you're putting a lot more stress on the defense. And remember, they were a top unit when they went with Jonathan Gannon. They led the NFL in sacks. Like that was their bread and butter. They could get after the quarterback. And then what happened the year after? They were one of the worst defenses of the world with Sean Desai. And then they went to Matt Patricia. And that was a whole nightmare in and of itself. So I'm not saying that's going to happen with Vic Fangio. I'm not saying Kevin Petula is going to have the Brian Johnson season. But like, there's nothing about some of these moves that make me go, okay, this team necessarily got better. And so, like you said, they aren't going to win 14 games. I think they are going to show areas of weakness and struggle. And to me, this is just a retooling year before they make another Super Bowl run. I just think it's a gap year for this team. And that's what I mean by regression is if you're going to see a team like the Cowboys or the Commanders kind of rise to the occasion, this is the year because of all the kind of shuffling and reshuffling the Eagles are doing on the roster with backups becoming starters and rookies having to play key snaps again. Like, you're asking a lot from these players. And sometimes when that happens, it doesn't pan out the way you think it is.
I think the talent on this team is just so much more than those other two teams that I think they don't have to worry about a deep push, as you're alluding to. I just looked it up. There is at least one come-from-behind victory in the second half that Jalen Hurts put on. Would you like to guess the game that I'm thinking of?
In the wild facing a deficit.
Yes, a come-from-behind win in the fourth quarter in the second half of the year. This should be a team that you know very well.
It wasn't the Panthers. We didn't have
a lead. It was the Panthers.
We didn't have a lead.
We were up 17-16. They scored 8 points in the fourth and went ahead. So we had a second half lead in that game. And the first Commanders game they won. They came from behind and won. And then you mentioned a gap year. The last time they had a quote-unquote gap year, they started 10-1. And then the roof just fell out because the guys didn't want to tackle. So it's not as though everything was awful for that team. This was still a very good team, and it fell apart at the seams right around that bye week. And then they had to play I remember talking about it. They had a gauntlet of, like, Buffalo, Kansas City, Baltimore, like a Cowboys game, and then somebody else. It was a rough stretch, and they kind of folded at the end, but they were still a pretty good team to start that season. So all of this to say is that I'm not super, super worried about the Eagles this year, but I'm not sure that they are going to be the presumed Super Bowl favorite throughout the season. We got to remember, too, the Lions were the overwhelming favorite going into the year to represent the NFC, but they had 20 guys on defense go on IR and still were the one seed. So, like, anything can happen as far as the NFL goes. How would you order these teams if you had to pick today before we get into perfect takes?
I don't think the Eagles win the division. I think I lean no, like I genuinely don't. Like, this is where I said, like, the regression comes in. Like, nobody's won the NFC East back to back, like, dating back to the early 2000s. And, like, there were some, like, gauntlet teams throughout that division and that time period where it's like somebody should have done it and nobody did. And so all the points I'm bringing up about the Eagles regression, like, this happened literally 2 years ago with this organization. This is a team that started 500 6 weeks into the year this past year before going on the run they did. Like, again, if their superstars get banged up or some of this gelling with younger guys doesn't work out the way they're panning it does, this goes south very quickly. And so I think they are still a 10-11 win team, but this is where it opens the door for the team like a Cowboys of Commanders. I trust Jaden Daniels more than I trust Dak Prescott. I trust the command he has. I really do think he is the next coming of, like, a superstar. I do think they made enough additions to where they win the division. Cowboys, I'm going to say third for right now until they show me on defense that they're a better unit than they look on paper. And then the Giants at the end. And I hate to say it about the Giants, like, their defensive line is gaudy, but, like, I can't trust their offensive line and how they're going to protect the quarterback that's throwing their receivers the ball. Like, I love Malik Nabers. The wide receiver room is solid there, but this isn't an offense I can get behind to have me believe that they're going to be anything but fourth in this division.
Yeah, I have to agree with the Giants, right? I don't have much faith that they can overcome any of the other teams in the division. So they're going to be four for me. Three, I'm actually going to say Washington. I think they are due for regression. I think that just because Jaden Daniels put forth such an outstanding season doesn't necessarily mean that they are regression proof, right? The last time we saw somebody really light it up like that, I think, was Mahomes. And he's still in a different stratosphere than Jaden Daniels was.
What was year two for Mahomes?
He's a much better player than Daniels was. How many touchdowns did he have in his first season starter?
He also had two All-Pros he was throwing to, where but I think we can
how
both
many
agree
players have ever thrown for 50?
I think having Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill compared to just Terry McLaurin and then everybody else. And then also, I think we both will agree Andy Reid is better than Cliff Kingsbury. So we can go tit for tat right here all day long. I'm not saying Jaden Daniels is necessarily better than Patrick Mahomes, but as a rookie quarterback, we haven't seen a quarterback produce like that, like almost ever.
I would say that was Mahomes's rookie season and we kind of have, but I digress. So I had Washington third. I think Dallas, if Dak stays healthy, I think they are a better team than Washington. And I alluded to why I think Philly should be the division winners again. With that, I'm going to get into my perfect take because it's pretty related to this. I think Washington's going to miss the playoffs. I really don't have faith in a lot of their additions. Outside of some of the rookies, like I like Trey Amos. I think Jalen Lane is an interesting like wide receiver depth guy. Bill, I don't remember if he was a seventh round pick or an undrafted free agent, the rookie running back, seems to have all the rage right now. It reminds me of Isaiah Pacheco, what would that be, 3 years ago, when he was getting a ton of offseason hype. I don't know if they're similar in talent. Bill looked kind of slow in that preseason game, so we'll have to see how that works out. But I just don't have the faith in their additions, and I actually think that the defense got a little bit worse. And while the defense didn't win them games last year, down the stretch, it kind of kept them in some games at key points. So I think Washington's going to miss the playoffs by virtue of there being two more talented teams in the division.
It's insane that a team that quite literally upgraded from like a bottom five, bottom 10 unit, you kick Brandon Coleman in, who is a serviceable left tackle as a rookie, in at left guard and allow him to be a mauler there. Tyler Biadasz is a solid center. You brought up Laremy Tunsil. Like, that is your left-hand side of the offensive line. And then if rookie Josh Connerly steps up the way he has been and some of the OTAs, training camps, the preseason, like, if that is what we are to expect to believe, this is a huge upgrade over the offensive line they had last year. If Deebo Samuel and Terry McLaurin are healthy, that is a massive upgrade at the wide receiver position. So like, to me, like it's hard for me to stave off regression unless you simply write off injury. And like, if that's what you want to do as this being the oldest roster, I get it. But again, this is a defense that generated a lot of, I want to say like, not a lot, but enough negative plays where they could keep their offense in it. And there's just nothing, barring major injuries, for me to go that this offense isn't going to be top 10 again because of how it's structured, because of how they move the football. Like, you can't stop what they do. And when you go to try to stop what they do, they have the ability to change direction. And very few teams outside of teams with Lamar Jackson, Jaden Daniels, like these freaks who can just change the numbers because of what they can do with their legs, you just can't stop them. And that's where it's just like, I'm not like Lamar Jackson. The only time he's been out of like playoff consideration, he's hurt. So unless we're banking on a Jaden Daniels injury, like that to me is kind of what sphere he has entered into until he shows me otherwise. And so like, I know we're in perfect takes. I know we're rambling. I'll get the my take. That's where I think that's out of pocket. But you believe what you want to believe. We want all the haters in the world because when we prove you wrong, I'll be the first to let you know. And you'll tell me vice versa as well. But my perfect take this week, I do not think Jalen Hurts after this year will be in any of the elite quarterback conversations aside from Eagles fans. I'm talking like national media pundits will be like, whoa, we were wrong about Jalen Hurts. Like, this guy can't throw the ball for a lick of crap. And like, I don't know what's happened since 2022, since Shane Steichen left. Maybe he is going to need the return to find some invigoration. But this is a guy that looked awful for most of last year and just turned it on for a postseason run. We saw Joe Flacco do this. He got a big payday, and then afterwards, the Ravens kind of just they were a borderline playoff team. They had a couple bad seasons kind of wrapped up in there before they drafted Lamar Jackson. Like, that's, I think, the course that we're going to start to see the Eagles head if Howie Roseman. I am just drawing blanks all day today. Howie Roseman, if he's not able to hit as frequently as he's been able to recently, like, this is a team that's going to be due for regression. And I think Jalen Hurts gets exposed because of what's going on with the cupboards and how bare they're starting to become.
How are we going to measure that in terms of not being?
I'm saying, like, nobody is going to talk about him as like a top five quarterback, this top 10 quarterback. Like, he is going to be looked at as like the Jared Goff line. Like, he is going to be this average quarterback that, like, people talk about, like, yes, you can win games with, obviously you can win the Super Bowl with this kind of dude, but this is not somebody that puts a team or a roster on his back and puts them over the top. And I think that starts to get more exposed this year. Like, I don't think he's in top 10 conversations, but if we need to put a number on it, and this is what I hate, like, when we bring like QBR, EPA, or some of these numbers into it, because you can have offensive production like Tua does in Miami, and he's not necessarily a top 10 quarterback. But we will say, like, as a, I guess we can use QBR. You know what? We can use QBR. Let me see what Jalen Hurts was this past year, because I'm raving on how bad his QBR was this past year. And let's see where he is on that aspect to see if I have a argument.
So I don't. 2024. I would say a lot of
Jalen Hurts was 10th in QBR this past year. So he was right on the bubble. So I'll say he's not top 10 in QBR at the end of the year.
All right. I don't personally think Hurts is an elite QB. I don't think most serious analysts say that. I think that's more the topic of stuff like First Take. Or a lot of the,
but that's my take, like, is that those people will be talking about Jalen Hurts as average like this time next year.
Okay,
like, that's what I'm saying. It's like the narrative around Hurts, and that's why I was like, okay, so we'll use QBR as like the metric threshold for the take purpose. But that's what I'm saying is, like, everybody talking about Hurts is going to be talking about him in a different light. It's not just going to be the us analytic nerds that understand what's going on in Philadelphia.
All right, I'm kind of following now. Just the Super Bowl win, I think, gassed him up quite a bit. And he didn't break Cam Newton's touchdown record, right? He's just approaching it. He broke the single season record. But yeah, I think stuff like that, I guess, maybe skews a lot of people's perception, especially if media, because he won the Super Bowl. He's the Super Bowl MVP. Although, I mean, I would have voted for Josh Sweat, but I get what you're saying. It's just kind of a hard one to quantify in my mind, but I like it. Like I said, I don't think Hurts is a top 10 quarterback at the moment, but if public perception changes, then I can get on board with what you're saying.
I think if we're saying in a vacuum, yes, Hurts is not a top 10 quarterback. There are several things that would support that argument. It is more just, how is everybody talking about this player? And I think they're going to have another like first round playoff exit that's going to be embarrassing, and everybody's going to be like, it's Hurts the problem. And then they're going to have to go get another offensive play caller, fix the whole situation. They'll add a whole bunch of talent, and then everything will be fixed again. But that's where it's just like, I think that has to become more of a realization for the national public.
All right. I'm following now. I can see that one coming true just as much as I can see the Commanders missing the playoffs coming true. I can't believe you compared Daniels to a multi-time MVP and to Josh Allen in terms of effect when we have one season as sample size.
But he literally just did it. Like, that's one season. The EPA numbers, like, but that, what I'm saying is, it's like Lamar Jackson.
CJ Stroud just did it and then fell off the next year.
No. CJ Stroud. Okay, you've seen my EPA graphs.
I know. I have.
Understand the disparity, and like what Jaden Daniels did.
We could have Cam Ward top those numbers and then fall off the next year.
He's not.
And how would we react? We don't know that. We didn't say Jaden Daniels would going into the year.
Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson.
Before we sign off here, where did you have Daniels in the draft? Not just like QB3 or whatever, like around where would you have placed him prior to the draft? He was 23rd on my board, I believe. So prior to that draft, this wasn't something we expected. To be frank, everyone made fun of that pick at the time because people thought Drake May should have been the pick there. So as far as he just came in and did it, this was an unexpected thing. So it's not out of the realm where the Tennessee Titans, who are a bottom five team with Cam Ward, could do the same. This is what I'm saying. We can't expect Daniels to repeat something this good after one sample size when that's what we expected out of CJ Stroud, who people were billing as being a multi-time MVP in his future off of one season. I think we need to pump the brakes just a little bit.
Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, the years that we remember them having when they first hit the scene, you have to remember the teams that drafted them already had good rosters around them. These were playoff capable teams. Like the Ravens before they started Lamar just lost in the wild card with Joe Flacco as the starter for most of the season. Patrick Mahomes before he got the reins. Alex Smith was in the playoffs the year before he took over the reins. So they took over the keys of a playoff team and took them to new heights. Jaden Daniels comes onto the scene as the second overall pick, and he produces a top five offense. CJ Stroud didn't do that. Like, stop comparing CJ Stroud to this man, Jaden Daniels. And as much as you want to go all, oh, who saw this coming? You're right. I didn't see this coming. You didn't see this coming. But go look at all the draft boards for Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes prior to their drafts. Nobody outside of the teams that drafted them saw the talent. Like Patrick Mahomes, the only two people that saw it was Andy Reid and Sean Payton. Most consensus boards had him outside the first round. That's just his public view. Lamar Jackson was even viewed as a quarterback, and the Ravens moved up to get him. So, like, don't come here with the, yes, they were mocked for it. Absolutely, they were mocked for it. But Jaden Daniels has made them right every step of the way since.
Did Lamar and Mahomes not make the Chiefs and the Ravens right? Like, my point is, I just don't think we can continue to have him off of one sample size be like, oh, this guy's a top three quarterback, like instantly. That's why my point is, pump the brakes a little bit. By the way, and the last thing I'll say, one of my good buddies from high school, we are getting way off track. One of my good buddies from high school actually tweeted out before the draft, during the combine, whatever team Mahomes goes to is going to be my new favorite team. And he was like in my ear about it the whole time. I was like, Mahomes isn't going to be that guy. Prove me wrong. So there were believers out there is what I'll say for Mahomes.
No, and there were believers, and there were believers out there for Lamar. There were believers out there for Jaden Daniels.
Daniels is different as well because his draft season was also a Heisman year. So I think we have to take that into consideration as well. Whereas Lamar won it 2 years or a year prior to his draft. But I think that's going to do it for us. We can do more quarterback talk. What are we doing Tuesday? The NFC West. Oh, there's going to be some quarterback talk. Maybe not as hype as the quarterback talk from today, but the NFC West, I think, is, as far as divisions go, to me, is the most open division in all of football this season. So it'll be interesting to see the conversations we have there. And then next Thursday, obviously, we will talk about the Panthers, maybe get into a little bit of the Panthers preseason. I don't know, but we'll get there. But until then, you can find us on YouTube, Twitter, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, and we will see you next week. Keep pounding.